Have you noticed that forest fires seem to be getting worse? In the last couple of decades, the number of acres destroyed annually is well above historic averages. And as the planet grows warmer, we may have to accept wildfires as a regular part of life. Here to help is Nick Mott, co-author with Justin Angle of the new book, This is Wildfire: How to Protect Yourself, Your Home, and Your Community in the Age of Heat. Nick is an environmental journalist who is a reporter and producer for Montana Public Radio, and Justin is a professor of marketing at the University of Montana College of Business. Here's Nick to share five of their key insights.
This is Nick Mott, and I'm here to talk with you about the book I co-wrote with Justin Angle. It's called This is Wildfire: How to Protect Yourself, Your Home, and Your Community in the Age of Heat. 1. Wildfire isn't inherently bad. It just is. In the summer of 2023, smoke from Canada choked the East Coast. There were mass evacuations in Yellowknife. Communities like Lahaina in Hawaii were destroyed. It was both a remarkable season and an utterly ordinary one. The effects of wildfire are more present for more people than ever before. In 2020, wildfires scorched an area of the U.S. 50 times larger than New York City. Fire season is 80 days longer than it was 30 years ago. And every fire season, headlines sprout up across the country. Fire threatens a community. A megafire burns 100,000 acres of forest. Smoke inundates cities. For those losing homes, livelihoods, or lives, the impacts of wildfire are undeniably tragic. But there's a much deeper story to tell. While wildfires are burning more land than in living memory, we need to look historically to understand our relationship with fire. Ecosystems across the country depend on wildfire to thrive. In some forests, flames thin out dense undergrowth and make room for older, fire-resilient species to flourish. Some species can only reproduce after fire comes through. Animals like deer and elk, and even rare species like Canada lynx, depend on the ecosystems low-intensity natural fires create. So wildfires have become something with two competing roles in our world. We need to suppress and get rid of them. And yet, we need more of them, burning in the right places in the right way. The thing is, this predicament is all thanks to us. 2. We got ourselves in this mess. For millennia, wildfires shaped the landscape. Our forests and grasslands evolved with fire. Indigenous groups across the country used fire for hunting, foraging, and culture. But when settlers colonized the West, fire became a problem. In 1910, a 3-million-acre conflagration known as the Big Burn sent smoke across the country. The Forest Service, in its infancy at the time, began an all-out war on flames. The so-called 10 a.m. rule dictated that all burns were to be snuffed out by 10 a.m. the next morning. Educational and PR campaigns, like Smokey Bear, made wildfire public enemy number one. The country built a military-style apparatus dedicated to putting out fire. And for decades, we were good at that. Forests across the country that historically might have experienced natural wildfire every 10 to 30 years haven't seen it in a century. That means they're clogged up with fuel, small trees and shrubs, brush, all the stuff that would have been burnt out by those historic low-intensity burns. So in many areas, when wildfire does come through, it burns faster and hotter than it would have naturally, because the forest is so loaded up with that fuel. This is the first cause of our wildfire predicament. Second is how and where we're developing. Thanks to rising cost of living in city centers and the aesthetic appeal of residing among mountains and forests, more people are living in areas prone to wildfire than ever before. Those areas, called the Wildland-Urban Interface, or WUI for short, contain about a third of all homes in the U.S. Across the West, about 16 million homes are in fire-prone areas. Third is climate change. Skyrocketing greenhouse gas emissions, caused, paradoxically, by our addiction to burning, in this case fossil fuels rather than forest fires, have created hotter, drier conditions. Less snow accumulates on top of mountains in the winter, and it melts off earlier than ever as what used to be spring snow falls as rain. Hotter, drier air further dries out trees and grass and other fuel, making it more flammable, and allowing fires to burn bigger, faster, and during more hours of the day. Combined, these factors have made wildfire feel like an unstoppable and deadly force. 3. We need more fire, not less. Scholars say we're in a fire deficit, meaning we ought to be experiencing a lot more wildfires than we are right now, based on our environmental conditions. And this relates back to how we treat wildfires. Some firefighters like to say a fire put out is a fire put off. Historic wildfires create barriers to newer ones. So when a new wildfire erupts, it may hit a wall when it hits a burn zone from, say, 5 or 10 years ago. But today, because we've been putting out so many fires, there are far fewer of those fire scars that can act as barriers on the landscape. One way to help us get out of this predicament is so-called prescribed fire. That means low-intensity wildfire, intentionally set in the right place at the right time to stay under control and simulate how it might have burned historically. Those are hard to get done. Climate change is closing weather windows, prescribed burns gone awry generate political opposition, it takes staff and resources and environmental review, and people just don't like smoke in the skies. But fire professionals also like to say, how do you like your smoke? In big, suffocating doses, when big fires like the Canadian ones this summer erupt? Or in smaller, easier to tolerate and plan for, pulses? The latter is what we can get with prescribed burns. 4. We can protect ourselves from flames. Retired fire scientist Jack Cohen started studying how fires burnt homes back in the 1980s, before we were seeing the devastating fire seasons we are today. He wondered, what is it that causes homes to burn? He realized it wasn't the flames themselves that engulfed communities. Instead, embers drifted off of the flame, sometimes miles away, and floated their ways to rooftops and yards. This is what sets neighborhoods ablaze. And Cohen says there's a lot we can do about it. This seemingly basic realization set off a shift in his mindset. The problem isn't with wildfires, he realized. It's with embers causing homes to burn. We can't control all the wildfires, but we can control how vulnerable our communities are. So there are basic things we can do to make our homes and neighborhoods more resilient. Here are some of them, in a nutshell. First, think about your roof. That's like a giant landing zone for embers. If you have a wood roof, replace it with a fire-resistant material, like metal. Regularly blow out all the leaves and pine needles in your gutter. Seal up attic vents and soffits with fine mesh so embers can't get in. If you have a wooden fence, replace the sections directly touching your house with fire-resistant material. Get rid of flammable wood chips and mulch and firewood next to your house. Farther out from your home, think about the things that can catch fire in your yard. That means trees and shrubs should have lots of space between them, and solutions might mean cutting them down to get that vegetation the breathing room it needs. Think about creating breaks in fuel, things like paths and walkways. And lastly, think about what you and your family will do when a fire does come through. Are you signed up for your area's emergency notices? Pack a go bag with snacks, insurance documents, prescriptions, N95 masks, and other essentials you can grab in a hurry. Talk with your family about where you'll go during an evacuation and how you'll get there. 5. We need collective action, too. The above are just some of the actions you can take to make your home more resilient. To find out more, connect with a local fire preparedness organization. In fact, in dense developments, your neighbor's lack of fire resilience can spell danger for your home, too. So fire is a community issue, not just an individual one. And local organizations that can build trust among the community are crucial to addressing fire risk across the country. If you don't have one in your area, consider starting to mobilize your neighborhood and talk about fire risk at community meetings. Other helpful solutions can mean creating community tool libraries so those without resources can get the work done too, and actions as simple as offering to help out neighbors. But real change has to come at the policy level too. Some of the work required on homes costs a lot of money. Replacing all the wood roofs in fire-prone areas, for example, is estimated to be a $6 billion problem. Federal and local governments need to make a serious investment in community fire resilience, along with prescribed burning. We also need zoning and codes that can make sure development, both new and old, is up to snuff when it comes to wildfire. Big picture, policy change also means taking rapid and meaningful action on climate change. Ultimately, we need to reformulate our relationship with wildfire and recognize that the problem isn't just out there in forests. The problems are right where you live, and that's empowering. It means that each of us, as citizens and community members, have the agency to create a more fire-resilient world.
Thank you, Nick. That was 5 big ideas from This is Wildfire, How to Protect Yourself, Your Home, and Your Community in the Age of Heat by Nick Mott and Justin Angle. You might also like our book bite for The Heat Will Kill You First, Life and Death on a Scorched Planet by Jeff Goodall. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.